This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome Harry Siegel, a columnist at the New York Daily News, the op-ed editor at the Daily Beast. We reflect upon Bill de Blasio. We're on the eve of a mayoral election, and Bill de Blasio will remain mayor until the end of 2021. However, thoughts of his early days at City Hall and what, after 8 years, he has achieved. Harry's writing the first of what I presume, I hope, are a series of columns about the de Blasio years. Harry, a very good evening to you. My indistinct first memory of Bill de Blasio, after hearing about him, as an aide to Hillary Clinton back in the 1990s and an active member of the Democratic elite in New York and throughout the country, many years after that, as a staffer, but then making the transition into public office as the representing the people of New York. My first memory is his meeting with Mike Bloomberg, a very successful mayor and also a very successful geopolitical power. Mike Bloomberg, 12 years the mayor of New York, his election in 2001 was a surprise, but then again, we were all in shock after the attack on New York. Bloomberg installed at City Hall, I read over the years, much the same apparatus that is Bloomberg News. A great attention to detail, lots of data storms, and smart people moving very swiftly to take care of the city. However, Bill de Blasio, and my memory of the first meeting is that it didn't go well. I don't know why. It puzzled me at the time. Do you have an explanation after 8 years as to why Bill de Blasio would not embrace a man as successful as Michael Bloomberg, who has remained anchored in New York City and concerned with New York City affairs all these years? Good evening to you, Harry.
Good evening, John. So Bill de Blasio ran on two different levels as a correction to Mike Bloomberg. For voters who hadn't been following things this closely, there was a lot of ill will built up for Bloomberg, not because of how he'd governed, but because he effectively gave himself a third term and overturned the will of the voters to do that. He said there was an emergency with the crash in 2008 at Lehman Brothers, and he was the only guy who could fix this, and we had to change the law. And so he did that, and that alienated a lot of voters. This didn't show up in all the polls for a number of reasons, and de Blasio sensed that. So that was one reason he positioned himself against Bloomberg. The second is that he ran against stop and frisk, which had become a signature Mike Bloomberg policy. And more broadly, he ran as a progressive or a liberal and a correction to Bloomberg's technocratic approach. And the whole thing was a tale of two cities. So right after the election, Bloomberg had him to City Hall. They had, I believe Bloomberg had water, de Blasio had coffee. They talked for an hour. And it was fine. It wasn't necessarily a substantial conversation, but there was no heat or friction there. Bloomberg said, you know, Rudy didn't criticize me. They had their own deal. And I'm not going to criticize my successor, even though this guy had been really elected to repair the damage of the Bloomberg years, as he sometimes put it. But then, at de Blasio's inauguration, people went pretty far out of their way to take shots at Mike Bloomberg while he was sitting there. Harry Belafonte said the city had become a plantation that ignored hungry children. Tish James, who's then the public advocate, said de Blasio's victory was inevitable because of children going hungry while the rich are getting new tax credits. She was there with Dasani, the young homeless girl who a New York Times reporter had profiled at some length that year, had become a sort of face or symbol of inequality. And plainly, from very early on, symbolically, de Blasio wanted to present himself as a clean shift and a restoration of progressive democratic ideals. Just one other thing I'll note is there were a whole series of articles. I remember Time had a headline, Bill de Blasio and his family are the new face of the Democratic Party. You know, everyone loves a winner. People do not love de Blasio so much 8 years later, but that's striking as Eric Adams, the Democratic nominee and pretty much certain next mayor, is declaring himself the new face of the Democratic Party, generating a lot of headlines to that effect, meeting with Biden at the White House, and so on. And it's a reminder of how quickly that could change when you go from the glow of victory and rhetoric to the complications of governing.
The governing. I read in your New York Daily News column that Mr. de Blasio devoted his first term to preparing for running for president. I didn't know that at the time, but it explains a deal of his comments and his lack of enthusiasm for being mayor. I remember one ticker tape parade that struck me as very odd. And in the second term, he spent time, as your column reports, preparing to run for governor. So that the conclusion I have is that Bill de Blasio was never comfortable as mayor. That was not the pinnacle of his ambitions. Is that a generalization that stands up?
Yes, although it's very, very likely to be the end of his ambitions. Like, de Blasio, in fact, won a five-way complicated primary in 2013, sweep Joe Loda, a very credible Republican of the time who since left the party in the general election. It was after 20 years of non-Democratic mayors in an overwhelmingly Democratic city, people wanted to return to quote-unquote normal that way. Eric Adams is going to sweep Curtis Sliwa, your former radio colleague, and not the most Loda is a serious man. Curtis Sliwa is not, I would say. But nobody's going to be confused into thinking this is a mandate. It's actually just a very disappointing general election where there's not any actual choice for most New Yorkers up and down the ballot for mayor, for controller, for public advocate. The results are already in effect. And so winning a crowded Democratic primary now, starting this year for the first time with weird new rules, so a ranked choice voting system, the primary moved up to June, is, you know, akin to gaining control over City Hall for four or more likely 8 years. And I don't think that's the healthiest thing for the city at large.
Mr. de Blasio's 8 years. Again, because I lived in Manhattan, I have a very narrow view. I don't know the boroughs. I don't know your Brooklyn, Harry. I will say that under Mike Bloomberg, Manhattan blossomed. It was safe. It was sparkling. It attracted an enormous international tourist trade. The arts were revelatory. It was easy transportation, continuing to convert the city to bike lanes, to bus lanes, to making it easier to be a pedestrian, which is mostly what I am in Manhattan. Under Mike Bloomberg, and then that continued. The momentum continued under Mr. de Blasio. I don't know if I can separate out de Blasio before the pandemic and de Blasio after the pandemic. All I'll say is my sense is in his second term, Mr. de Blasio turned away from New York City in some fashion, but I never understood why. Almost as if he was disappointed in New York's lack of enthusiasm for him as opposed to his enthusiasm for New York.
He never seemed to embrace the persona and the stagecraft of being mayor in the way that most of his predecessors had. Mike Bloomberg, by the way, didn't embrace that. But he had, you know, dozens of millions of dollars a year to convince people that was fine, to sort of spend on behalf of shifting public opinion that de Blasio did not. You know, Bloomberg was also, he didn't love doing press conferences. He wasn't huge on being at parades. There was sort of a pinch sour quality to a lot of this. And you're absolutely right that de Blasio in a lot of ways, you know, sort of smoothed some of the edges off of, but continued the Bloomberg approach. So crime numbers continued to drop. Development continued to surge, and a little more money in the course of that got shared with people who were needier. A fair amount of new money went to city workers through contracts, but that was inevitable as Bloomberg had left those unsealed. And then, you know, something like $5 billion, which sounds like a lot of money, but in what's now, you know, nearly $100 billion budget in over 8 years is not so much, really did get redistributed in what was probably a healthy sort of corrective. Now, since the pandemic, violent crime continues to be, it's plateaued after spiking last summer, but it's significantly up from 2019. There's real questions about Midtown's recovery and what's coming next. I'm not sure de Blasio has done the most wonderful job with all this, but frankly, these are very difficult circumstances, and we've seen a rise in violent crime and gun crime in particular nationwide that hasn't been tied to a policing approach, to whether or not states have bail reform like New York does. So there's something going on here that may be beyond the mayor's orbit. That said, the idea that this fairly unpopular mayor, who most New Yorkers are happy to see go, is now going to credibly run for governor is, to me, on the face of it, ridiculous. And the fact that he won a crowded race where nobody thought he had a chance once before, good for him. But a lot like athletes, you know, people get a little crazy with their belief they've done it, they can do it, they're going to show all the haters. And at a certain point, the haters turn out to be right. And that's what happened with de Blasio's presidential run, mostly forgotten now and very embarrassing. And what I expect is likely to happen if, when, and as he intends to, he runs for governor.
Harry Siegel, the New York Daily News, a columnist, the Daily Beast, the op-ed editor. Farewell to Bill de Blasio, part one. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.